Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thank you for joining us for what is probably a highly anticipated and emotional return with episode 60. It's been a while, and it must be said, mate, that we've been inundated with messages, calls. I think the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, got in touch with us. The Education Department, everyone has been all over it going, where are the Two Regular Teachers?
Well, where are they? We didn't hear from Simon Birmingham, though, did we? The current education minister. So, come on, Simon. You know, that's yeah.
Well, look at him.
I noticed that your eyes welled up just as you went to press record then, and I appreciate that. And we do appreciate all those people who might have been hanging on tender hooks to see whether we would actually come back. I do wonder if people thought maybe we were gone for good, Adam.
Well, maybe we just couldn't do it. We'd just fallen off the face of the earth and hadn't done that sort of closing episode.
It was a little bit like that, wasn't it? We kind of did fell off the face. A lot of our correspondence was via private tweets and private Facebook and text messaging, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was, and we got all that feedback, and it felt a bit funny because we had an anecdote episode up our sleeve, and we kind of, reports come along and you get caught up in that, and then we just decided as a pairing, didn't we, that we actually needed to take a short hiatus, I suppose it is, to look after ourselves, look after the jobs and the responsibilities that we had, not only at school but in our own lives as well, and that we needed to take that step back. But we're always going to come back, mate. Like John Farnham, like Joe Bugner, and all those were Pat Cash. Well, we're always coming back.
Well, when a lot of those people come back, some people do groan, don't they? So let's hope that our comeback doesn't feel like that to people, Adam.
Exactly right.
Now, look, one of the other reasons is, I guess, at least one of us has been unwell towards the end of that term too, Adam. And we're going to touch on that with teachers and being unwell later in the podcast. But you did mention the anecdote episode. And again, we'd like to put it out there to people if you've got any good anecdotes to send them to us, because we have got an anecdote episode basically ready to go, haven't we, Adam?
Yeah, we do.
There's probably a couple of small little holes that could still be filled. So if you've got one, please send us a private email or put a comment on the blog.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you. So we aim to sort of do the anecdote episode probably in a few weeks, Adam.
Yeah, we kind of want to get a couple under our sleeve, because just before we press record, we kind of looked at each other and went, do you remember how to do this? Do you remember how to kick this off and get this going? But it's like a really comfortable pair of jeans, mate. You can slip back in and you know the feeling, you know what it's like, and you kick it off. And I suppose everyone out there might actually be wearing 2, 3, 4 pairs of jeans at the moment, because the last couple of days have been some of the grimmest weather. I almost feel like I'm in the grim northern Norway forests in Sweden and Scandinavia and things. We are just getting, it's icy, biting cold is how I would put it.
Yeah, we are at the bottom of Victoria, and it's normally a fairly cold winter, but it's really cold this time, you're right. And I'll apologise for my voice in advance. It's still recovering from some sort of infection. So it's been really cold, and still amazed. Before we head into the first topic, Adam, we've mentioned this before. I mean, it didn't get above 10 degrees today down in our neck of the woods. Still, the amount of kids that just wore a polo shirt going out.
It's unbelievable, isn't
and
it?
And shorts.
But unbelievable that parents wouldn't go, put on a jumper, please. Mm. Even a jumper would do the trick. I actually got into my kids and said, going to art today, they had to walk through the school. I said, you've got to put a jumper on. They looked at me as if I was crazy. I said, no, you're not walking over there. You're going to put a jumper on. It's ridiculous.
I had two students come in at the end of recess and lunch today, completely covered in mud. Because the old game of football on the oval doesn't change, the intensity doesn't change because of the weather.
Nah. It's a winter sport.
I thought it was quite comical, but by the end of lunch, when particularly one child did it twice, and I thought, come on.
I still think schools should be cancelled in these days. Anything below 10 degrees, if at 9 o'clock it's still 8 degrees, I'm sorry, everyone should go home, go back to bed.
Our friends in the Northern Hemisphere, they'd be licking their lips on some days when they get snowed in. Or maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But anyway, we are back, mate. We're really excited to be back. And we're going to get the ball rolling again tonight with three great topics, mate. So let's get into it.
Not too long ago, Adam, I saw a tweet from a teacher saying that she has overheard people use the term classroom frontline a lot when they're talking about being on the front line as a teacher. And it made me think, because in our tagline on our blog, we have that, tales from the classroom frontline. And this teacher said that she didn't like referring to her classroom as like a place of battle, because it didn't kind of paint the picture. Like, she wanted it to be a place that it's a happy place and the kids love it, and it shouldn't be about frontline. Now, I understood what she was getting at, but I guess, and I didn't tweet back or anything, but it made me think, we don't use that term in a negative way. We're not saying, we think it's brutal and, I mean, sure, at times it can be a tough job, but we don't use it in that way. And then I discovered a clip from ABC's The Drum show that's on, I think it's on 5 o'clock on weekdays here in Victoria. And Jane Carrow, quite a sort of supporter of teachers, did a really sort of interesting rant about supporting teachers and that we're human beings.
Mm.
And it took me back to the tweet from this other educator about classroom frontline. So it made me think, some days, like everyone in any job, you have tough days at work.
Yeah, you do.
And the adrenaline's running and you feel pressured. And sometimes I think it's okay to use that term, frontline.
I think so too. And I think that the tweet from that teacher is a little bit misguided. I think this idea of, I don't want to refer to my classroom as a place of battle, I want to be a happy place. Well, congratulations, but it's not going to be a happy place every day. And I think, you know, every job, as you said, has those tough days. And you do this, the classroom frontliner, when you've got, you know, kids going all over the shop and you've got so much work to do and things, it really does feel like a place of battle. That it's like a slog, and you've got to really almost put your head down and you're taking bullets. The bullets are just missing you and they're dinging off the top of your helmet that you've got on and things, and you're just pushing through to get that extra bit, a little bit of land. You know what I mean? To push forward a little bit and win it back for you. So you can go, right, I've got this land. I've ticked that one off. I've got that kid's assessment done. I've done my report. I've done all these sorts of things. And it is a bit like a classroom frontline. That's what we put at the start, isn't it? It's we're not trying to say that, like you said, in a negative light. It's saying, it's almost acknowledging that that's what it can be like.
Well, we do it as a play on words, don't we?
Yeah.
But it also means a lot of that stuff that you just said. Mm. And I think that, and this might explain maybe something about how my mind works, perhaps, who knows. But I find something that you said there is about, you know, like the bullets sort of, you know, pinging off. I mean, when I step into school, at this point in my career, when I step into school every day, it is kind of, to me, particularly at 9 o'clock when the real game starts, to me it's like stepping on a really fast freight train at a station, and the freight train is still going, hasn't stopped at the station. You just got to step on and hope you don't fall.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't stop going at that speed until maybe you get in the car to go home. And you know, if you've got other stuff going on in your life that might be you might find challenging or kind of anything, you know, in your personal life, that can make it just that little bit harder. And in Jane Carrow, we'll put Jane Carrow's segment on the blog. She mentioned that she really harps on the fact that you don't hear the politicians and you don't hear people who want to change education and get better teachers. You don't hear them talking about teachers as human beings. Sure, we've got to be professional and we've got to learn all the time, and that's what we're doing, but I think that gets lost sometimes. That, I don't know, my adrenaline runs full on in a classroom.
Yep.
So if I'm slightly off, it's tough, it's harder.
And your freight train analogy is an absolute ripper, because again, it comes back to, if you've got an angry parent in the morning, you've got a couple of sick kids, you've got this, that freight train is not only going by warp speed, but there's barely an opportunity sticking out for you to grab on. Is it sometimes that freight train's going, and you're waiting for that thing to come across to grab onto, and because of everything going on, it's not there. And you can actually miss that freight train, and you're playing catch up for the rest of that day, and catch up in your own, your mental stability and your ability, your physical stability, and you might be feeling sick and all these sorts of things. If you miss that freight train early, you can't catch it up because it's going so quick. And I think that's what it comes back to. People forget we are human beings. And sometimes you bring things to the classroom and into the job that you would much rather leave at home, but you can't let go. And I know, speaking to you off air about that when we had that discussion, I know it's much easier to talk about now for me, but I know back in 2011, when my father died in April of that year, the rest of that year, I reckon I missed the freight train four days out of five, simply because you've got all those things to bring along, and you know you've got to stand up in front of those kids and you've got to teach and you've got to put on that facade and you've got to do those sort of things. Because you've got those people to please. We're not in a job where you can go and hide in a cubicle. You can, you know, be on the road a bit. You can do all these things where there's not so much of that interaction, and you can get it out in other ways. The moment you stand there in front of 25 kids, it's on, and you've got to be on, otherwise you're going to lose them too. And and I think people forget that sometimes.
Absolutely, and thanks for sharing that, because that is a really big thing to share. And it does get forgotten sometimes. And I kind of think that we are all high achievers. I haven't met many teachers, or I haven't worked with many teachers who don't set the bar really high for themselves, and it kind of, I think the profession makes you do that automatically, which is a good thing. But I know that I do that, and I still sometimes almost fight inside. I kind of fight myself in terms to try and lower that a little bit, but it's hard. And I think if we go back to what you mentioned about the personal challenges that we can have, then you don't meet that sometimes too high a standard that you set for yourself. So constantly we're always not feeling like we've done well. And I know a higher percentage of teachers that feel like that more than... I don't know that many teachers that are just really cool with their job and just go home every day going, oh, I've nailed it, always thinking. And I think that increases pressure. And again, because we're human beings, you know, that after a while that can really grind you down. So look, it's an interesting topic, and I think we'd love to hear from people about maybe times when they've felt a bit shaky, and also what do you think about, like, is it not talked about how often teachers are, in the end, human beings, just like the kids?
So Rick, for a second topic tonight, I want to take you back to when we were 12, 13, 11 years old, and you know, you played under 12s football, I'm sure, back in the day, and I played junior football, and I played a lot of junior cricket. Back in the day when you did that, and there was the presentation night, and you came back and there were awards and things like that, you would recall probably that, I know for me, for cricket, there was always three awards. There was the batting award, you know, the batting average, the bowling average, and the coach's award, you know, for that kid that probably was good in both things, never didn't win, but, you know, good team member and that sort of stuff. There's three trophies that you'd get, and that would be it. And you'd go along for the night, and you'd see those people who win it, and you'd, you know, mix a little bit and go home for the night. Your parents might come along. I want to fast forward 20 years, 20 years in the sense that society's changed, and I want to bring your attention to an article. It was in the Washington Post recently about how Americans, is it becoming too hard to fail, and that schools are shifting towards a zero grade policy. Now, this is an interesting one, and I know talking off air you had mixed views on this, so to speak, but what they're trying to talk about is that they're finding it, that schools are finding it more difficult to actually punish kids and do things in terms of, if you get a 50, well, if you, you know, we'll pass you if you, you know, turn up to a reasonable amount of classes. If you don't get a certain grade, well, you can take it again, or in a few weeks' time you can sit it again. And I think for me, are we starting to race down a slippery slope? Are we having kids that are going to get to the end of high school not knowing how to fail, or not know how to handle failing? Or is a push for a no grade policy and things a better way of teaching our students?
Well, initially I liked the I liked kind of the idea of a zero grade policy. I mean, because we've talked about in past podcasts about how we sometimes feel a bit hamstrung with the letters and the numbers on reports. Doesn't tell the whole story. But I'm not sure whether a zero grade policy would work. Just to double check, or just to clarify, that this is, we don't have any evidence of this happening in Australian schools yet. But it says in Virginia's Fairfax County, one of the nation's largest school systems, are trialing this in middle and high schools. In middle and high school, where students can earn no lower than a score of 50 if they make, in inverted commas, a reasonable attempt to complete work. So a lot of the article talks about how it gives students a second chance, doesn't it, if they go close to failing something, and also giving them, if they put in hard work, hand in all their homework, meet some other deadlines, show good work habits, then that will contribute to them maybe getting a pass, even if the work itself is not up to standard.
Yep.
So it's interesting, because why I'm wavering is I can kind of see, I like the idea, I guess, of giving kids, if they have tried their best, a way to maybe reset things. But I'm not sure, like you said, that with the slippery slope, I'm not sure about, because it does say later in the article that in some counties, in some areas of the states where it's being trialled, some kids have worked out the system and know that if they only hand in a certain amount and only put in this kind of amount, which is not good enough, but they know that the way the numbers will fall, they'll pass. So that, to me, alarm bells.
Right. Yeah, and it is. And I think, do we want to teach kids that near enough is good enough? And I think that's what it comes back to me. And I know that there's a thing in Maryland, which is obviously, I think it's a city in America, that said if they will get a 50% pass mark if they make a good faith effort. Now, is that realistic in linking to life as a whole? Now, if in life, if you just make a good faith effort, that'll get you over the line. So, yeah, look, I'm coming in for a job interview and I've had a bit of a dip, that's good enough. Well, is that going to get them a job? If they're put into, I mean, imagine if they're a builder. Couldn't a builder just put in a good faith effort and walk away and feel that that's an acceptable amount of work?
Does it need a number put to it? That's what I'd like to know. Because I think there's a way that you could have discussions with students from an educator's point of view, where you could look at and show them all the things that they've done well in terms of their work.
So you're actually saying take away the 50 and actually almost mark them as a good faith effort. And not so much using those words, but saying that, well, let's take away the grade.
I'm not sure how you do it, though.
Well, that, and that's the thing, but could you do it? Is it something, if you take away the zero grade policy, but merely talk about their work habits and their ability to hand things in and their, and, you know, having a look at all those abilities, does that give parents and does that give students a fair understanding of who they are and where they're at, as opposed to giving them the C, D grade or 60% or 50%?
Well, I think there has to be some part of assessment that parents get and also that students learn that focuses on how they work and how they learn and how they problem solve. I think that's a no-brainer. But I still don't think in Australia we've worked out how to measure that so much, though, because we're, you know, that we're just such a numbered, graded system that it's all about the academic process
and does it come back to maybe high school where they get to a certain age and they go, right, this is kind of what I want to be when I grow up, and then maybe they do activities and they do things that then they can be graded on in terms of their efforts and their knowledge and things like that, and go, well, look, you know, your efforts here were really good, but you need to learn more about this, you need to learn more about that. We're not giving you a grade, but we're giving you that consistent feedback to say that if you want to be, say, an electrician when you get older, you still need to be learning a little bit more and spending a bit more time on this. You're not giving them a grade, you're not failing them, you're just giving them that feedback.
In this system that we're reading about here, it sounds like there's not a lot of differentiating going on, because we have to do that in our job, you and I.
Yep.
But then as the kids get older, they have to complete exams, they have to complete tests, they have to learn things to complete that test. I can't see where you would tailor the material to kind of suit that child's learning style and level. It's interesting, it was making me think of a family member of mine who is studying to be, well actually at this stage is an accountant, but is doing further studies to go further up a ladder, living in the UK, and it was telling me recently about exams that he has to complete that basically set you up to fail. These exams are so hard that they're made so only a certain amount get through. So it kind of filters out all those people that maybe aren't quite up to it. And he's sitting some of these exams more than once. I don't know the system, so I'm not sure how he's able to do that.
Yep.
But that's another interesting thing about having a system where you almost have to fail and then try it again. I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't really get that either. Is it kind of saying, you know, again, I think it comes back to me that just, I don't know if it links properly, but it comes back to the feedback. You know, if they're failing that, can't you sit them down and say, look, you can't go this far, but you really need to further your knowledge of this. You need to further your understanding of that. You need to do this if you want to get here. Give them that feedback. Don't go, you failed. Well, what do I need to do more of? Like, what do I need to, you know, that sort of stuff. But look, mate, we probably want to wrap this one up. We've probably spoken about it a lot, but it's a really interesting one, mate, because I think particularly, obviously, we finished our reports, you know, last term, and we didn't get the opportunity to talk about that. But reports are always an interesting one, and what the parents want out of a report is different. But I think what we need to keep teaching our students and teaching our families is that failing is okay. Not getting an award just for turning up is okay. Being able to handle that and understand that they need to get better and they need to work to a certain degree, I think is still very important.
I completely agree, yeah. So we'd be interested in hearing your opinion on this topic. Well, for our final topic, Adam, a couple of interesting articles in The Age on the weekend based around a book written by Lucy Clark, which is called Beautiful Failures. And in one of her articles, which is an extract from her book, she talks about the PISA rankings that OECD countries do.
And for those people who don't know what PISA rankings are, Rick, they are?
Well, for those people that don't know, PISA is an acronym that stands for Program for International Student Assessment, and it tests 15-year-old children in OECD countries in math, science and reading, and in critical thinking and knowledge. And it basically ranks countries. And Australia have dropped down in the last couple of years, and it's been one of the big things that politicians refer to. And Lucy Clark, in her book, says that if we focus on these rankings so much, and if countries like Australia are saying, I remember Julia Gillard said a few years ago, we're going to get into this, I think it was in the top five by 2025 or
something like
that.
Yeah.
Lucy Clark says, if we're going to keep pushing this as a limit to get to, or the top, does this take the joy out of education for kids? And then, so that's one thing I want you to think about.
Yep.
And then in another article from The Age, which referred to Clark's book, it talked about, is standardized testing putting too much pressure on kids? Now, an expert from the Centre for Independent Studies, Education Research Fellow Jenny Buckingham, said that standardised testing doesn't, like PISA testing and NAPLAN testing, doesn't put pressure on kids. It's only a couple of days a year. There are no stakes attached to it. Now, Andrew Williamson, one of our listeners who's been on the podcast before, shared this on Facebook and said, rubbish, think about the My Schools website, a place where And I know they didn't set out to do this, but a place where schools are ranked.
Yeah.
Now, there's pressure on you and I to get good results. Yeah. There's pressure on our leaders to get good results for their school. I think the system is really skewed this way at the moment. And these articles annoy me.
They annoy me too, because Jennifer Buckingham, or Bucks, has got her head in the sand. She's Fanningham got her head in the sand. Has she been in a classroom during nap plan time seeing kids vomiting, seeing kids in tears, seeing them, all these sorts of things? Has she seen the parents when they get the results come bouncing up? Why are they a little bit below here? Why are they a little bit above here? What's going on here? And all these sorts of things. Has she actually had a look at the My Schools website and had a look at those schools that are, you know, working their backsides off but are in a low socioeconomic area and not looking as good as the others? So people instantly think, well, that school's not as good as that one. It's silly. She's got her head in the sand.
Australia's PISA results that have been dropping over the last couple of years, they have been in the news so much that is a hot topic. When education hits the news, if it's nothing else going on, it's about where Australia sits amongst its closest neighbours and amongst other high-performing countries in the world. And it's always, what can we do? How can we make teachers better? How can we make students better? I mean, we are already inundated with just a huge focus on... Yep. numbers and data, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We are. And I want to bring it back to, where are we going to take the joy out of teaching by focusing on this data? I think, and I know you said that as a question to think about, I think it's got the potential to. I don't see any reason why we can't climb back up the rankings if we do it in the right way. Now, I'm saying that now. I don't have that solution. If I had that solution, I'd probably be paid a lot of money to help schools implement it and do that sort of stuff. But it doesn't have to be smashing them with things. Can people come up with programs and things that can teach our students in an effective manner that they get a lot of enjoyment out of it while they're learning and doing all these things? But again, it also comes onto the teachers. If teachers are being smashed over the head with it, they're not going to be as motivated. They're not going to be as enthusiastic and energetic. It's going to take that away. And if the teachers aren't up and about for it, the students aren't going to be either. So it really is a delicate balancing act. I don't see why we can't rise up the rankings, but we've got to make sure that when we aim to do that, we've got to do it in the right manner.
But also, I think we have to take, in terms of rising up the rankings, we have to take into account the different cultural elements of countries and what they value in education, how they study, how curriculum is delivered. It's different, particularly with our Asian neighbours. It's different. There's a great quote in one of the articles from Yong Zhao, who I've seen speak before, fantastic writer and theorist on education. He said, in education, nobody does research on the harms of a lot of these tests. They're always doing research on to track how good it is, but we don't do a lot of research on the harms. And I think that's really, really true. And in one of the articles, they speak to the head of PISA, who says that the PISA testing tells us that, you know, we need to think of what kind of kids we're making for tomorrow. But I'm not sure, and talking about, you know, collaboration skills, social and emotional skills, all that sort of stuff. But as Lucy Clark asks, is this really the stuff that you can measure? And we talked about it in our first topic. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's a huge topic, and I'm going to leave it there for now. We might return to it. But
well,
I guess...
just before we do leave it, I do want to say one thing where Yong Zhao says about, do we, you know, assess the harms of it? I think, again, it comes back to keeping the head in the sand. A lot of these people who implement that want to keep their head in the sand and go, no, I only want to look at what's good about it and what all this sort of stuff. I don't want to do that because it's going to potentially reflect poorly on me or reflect poorly on the testing. So we're not going to go there. But I think if they open up their eyes a little bit, took that head out of the sand and actually looked around, they could actually take on that on board and actually improve what it is that they're doing.
Absolutely. So it's a huge topic. And if you read those articles, we'd love to hear from you. If you didn't, they'll be on the blog.
So, mate, we've been waiting a very long time. It's been a very long time, and I'm actually really happy that it's not my turn, because it's been so long out of the anecdote game that I probably wouldn't have one. So, RKT, I'm hand-passing the football off the back flank to you to stream down the wing with today's anecdote.
Hello to our international listeners who won't get that at all. But anyway, that's fine. I'm lowering the tone slightly here, Adam, but I hope our listeners don't give up on the podcast on this episode anyway. Look, we've talked about smells in the classroom and things that happen with kids, Adam, and I just want to touch on perhaps sometimes when we think... Look, I want to revisit the staff room, Adam.
Okay.
Earlier in the year, I was approaching the staff toilet.
Yeah.
And I got there, and one of my colleagues in my team walked out. Just happened to walk out of the little bathroom area just as I was about to go in.
Yep.
And she turned, we smiled, and then she turned back to me and she said, "For the record, it wasn't me." And Gee, I laughed. And when I went in there, well, we talked about freight trains earlier in the episode. I was hit by one, a different type of odour freight train.
So the light at the end of the tunnel was actually a freight train coming your way.
Now, this is more of a workplace issue, Adam, but I guess we've talked about conduct in the staff room, we've talked about dishes and things left around the staff room, and I guess I'm talking about etiquette. We teach the kids how to be hygienic, how to be careful in the toilet, how to, sometimes do we need to teach staff, Adam? Because,
well,
I tell you what, this was, I even saw things with my eyes.
It was that bad. See, if it's that bad, but can you control it sometimes? What happens if you've had something for lunch and it just doesn't agree with you, and you're sitting there, it's making those noises in the bottom, and you've got to go, and in the back of your mind you're going, I bet you I know what happens. I'll go and I want to come out, and there'll be a couple of people waiting there for me, and you'll be looking at them going, they're going to get that. But is that down to the school to actually put things in place, maybe, and actually have some spray sitting in there at the time?
I think so. There's even a sign, I think we've mentioned this before, there's even a sign in one of our toilets that says don't use too much of the spray because it permeates throughout the office area.
I think I'd rather that permeating through the office area than the alternative.
We can get a bad combination of the two sometimes. Are you this is a conversation that comes up though a lot in staff rooms. Are you a person that uses the staff toilet for that business that takes a little bit longer?
No.
You're a homebody in that way.
I think I've been able to train my body that way. You've always got to pop in there for a quick whiz or something like that. But very rarely. And it's if I have to, I try and do it at times where I've got planning or something like that, where people are in classrooms and you can kind of sneak on and go, and no one's going to be hanging around. And
very dangerous doing it on days like curriculum days when everyone's sort of constantly using it and everyone's there and about.
Awful.
It's just interesting. It is, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to lower the tone and be disgusting here, but it's kind of a question that comes up. People say, I will not use a public toilet, or I will not use the work toilet.
I'd rather be uncomfortable. I'll throw that out there. I would rather be uncomfortable for the last hour of my teaching day than have to go.
No.
Particularly if it hits you towards the end and people, because what do teachers do best is when that music starts, everyone goes to the toilet. We're as bad as the students. We get into the students. No, you had 25 minutes to go and you've just gone there. We do the same thing. We all go, I've got to go now.
Well, I tell you what, speaking of that, one of the great things about open learning classrooms when they kind of hit big, a few years ago when you and I were early in our career, was that, you could kind of give your team member a bit of a heads up, just a bit of a, I've just got to go, and quickly dash off to the toilet while they kind of just made sure your grade was okay. Whereas the old four-walled classroom days, you'd be holding on.
No, you can't do that. I would actually get a picture of myself, just the top half, and stick it above my laptop. So if someone popped their head in, it looks like my head's sort of there where the laptop is, and I'm kind of tapping away or something like that.
Quite clever.
It is an interesting one, mate, because it's a delicate issue.
So I'm going to leave it there, Adam, because I don't want to lower it any further, but I'll leave it with this. If you're willing to share, are you prepared to use the work bathroom, or do you prefer to wait until you get home?
So, mate, that brings an end to episode 60. And I must say, being back down on the Bellarine Peninsula and sitting in the chair, it's a good feeling, mate. It's good to be back.
Good to have you here, and it is good to be back. And we were talking off air about making sure that we aim to churn out consistent episodes this term, and perhaps only have 1 week off if we can help it, maybe sort of in the middle of the term. But just looking ahead to DigiCon next week, Adam. Our listeners might remember that we did an episode from the DigiCon conference last year, and unfortunately you're unable to make it this year, but I'm going to fly the flag and see if I can get a few segments and some interviews. So if you're listening this week and you're going to the DLTV DigiCon conference at Swinburne Uni next week, please keep a lookout, and we'd love to have you on for an episode. Adam and I will be recording an episode next week, but inserting some of those hopeful interviews that I can get at DigiCon. But it's a great teaching and learning conference, and it is great to catch up with some of our Vic PLN, and I'm sure that you'll be watching the tweets, Adam, from down.
Absolutely. And from myself to you, Rick, and probably from our listeners, good luck. I know you'll be presenting at DigiCon on the Wednesday, am I correct?
That's correct,
Presenting your piece on Edmodo. So good luck with that, mate. I know you did it last year, so...
Well, it's been a different year for my use of Edmodo's. I've got a few different sort of stories to tell, and I've very, very luckily been selected to do a Spark talk on Tuesday, Adam. So
I didn't know
so
that.
I'm
so
kind of looking forward to seeing how that goes.
Yeah, good stuff. So, mate, from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson. We've both been two regular teachers.